Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
That was great. That was such a great
fade. Time to start drinking water.
How are you, man? Wake up, Hollywood!
What's going on?
What's going on with you?
Nothing. Nothing at all.
No, you got a show later on tonight.
Yeah.
Where are you going to be performing?
Some bar. Crafts and Laughs. I think it's in Hawthorne.
Crafts and Laughs. So that's like 30 minutes away from here.
Yeah, I got to haul ass after this. Yeah, that's it.
Well, are you excited?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah,
bar, sure. Like, do you try all new materials? Is it all new?
No, some stuff. Sometimes you try a new idea. Sometimes you don't. I don't know. Just depends.
You know, that's it's funny because I asked because, you know, at Sundance, I wanted to do a whole bunch of new stuff.
Yeah.
But you're limited on what everybody gets learned with the band.
You know, you had the full. You had the full band up there.
The full
right?
band. So a lot of I had to change the set list because we brought a substitute saxophonist. And then that changed everything. There was like a limited amount of tunes.
Well, did you do any new stuff?
We did some Hendrix. We did some. We didn't do any new originals. But
do you do a lot of covers when you go up there? Is that mostly what it is?
I do one cover every set.
Oh, one cover every set.
So I did 2.5 hours at Sundance each night. Did about a cover each.
Are they music venues or is it like restaurant bar?
No,
type
they're the
bar?
Music venues.
Oh, they're music venues?
You'll see next year.
We'll
I'm
see.
Bringing you to
we'll
Sundance.
Dude,
I'm down 10 pounds, man.
Oh, from your no desserts?
No desserts, no carbs.
No carbs until
working
after.
Working out way
until
too much.
One day a week.
Yeah, my cheat day. I look forward to the cheat days. But, dude, that's still progress.
That's
I
good.
Like
10
that.
Pounds.
Holding
10 pounds
that
is good.
New Year's resolution, man.
You don't drink alcohol, do you?
No.
Okay.
Not
because that'll cut it off. Soda? You drink soda?
No sodas. Okay. But you know what? I was drinking sodas. You know, I started back up after not drinking them for like 15 years, which is stupid.
Yeah, you'll drop like 5 pounds instantly. Just drop.
Yeah,
soda.
I mean, just having cutting out the drinks, but you know, it feels good too. That's the weird thing.
Did you see the Super Bowl?
I did. Let's talk about the Super Bowl. What did you think?
It's all right.
What?
I wanted both teams to lose, so you can't really. You can't really enjoy.
Did you want one team to lose more than?
No, I absolutely hate both teams. So.
I can understand it because the Redskins are NFC, right?
The same division as the Eagles.
Yeah.
And the Eagles are the only team in that division that doesn't have a Super Bowl trophy.
Right.
And so it was kind of nice them always being the the team without it.
Right.
You can always throw that in their faces.
And now you can't.
And to me, it's like Brady's got 5 and like, okay, what's the difference between 5? There's no difference between 5 and 6.
Well,
but there's a big difference between 0 and 1.
That's true. But Brady would have been, I think, the all-time leader of Super Bowls.
He already is.
No, Montana. He's tied with Montana.
No, Montana at 4.
Oh, I thought he's. Oh, I thought he. Then you know what I'm looking at is the duo, because I think who's the coach the trophy's named after? Lombardi.
Lombardi.
Lombardi has 6.
Not Super Bowls, world titles.
Oh, what's the difference?
Well, the Super Bowl started 52 years ago. Before that, it was just the NFL championship.
Well, isn't that the same thing though?
Not really.
Because they didn't do playoffs.
They did. They have the NFL refers to everything in the Super Bowl era.
Okay.
That's era? When it be the error. That's when it became the NFL.
Okay.
When the AFL-NFL merged, they had the Super Bowl.
You didn't think it was a good game, though? It was a good game.
I barely paid attention.
There was so many yards.
I
1,100 yards.
I like defense sometimes.
I do like defense. And I like turnovers.
I like defense.
And there was only like one turnover.
There was one defensive play that whole game.
Yeah, I was a little annoyed
by that. One defensive play the whole game.
But you know what? It made it exciting for that reason. Yeah. And Foles, like, coming out of nowhere, just winning a Super Bowl against, like, the last year's winners. Pretty cool. What do you think of the halftime show?
I didn't watch it.
You didn't watch it at all?
I took the dog out.
Oh, Eddie!
I don't care about the Super Bowl halftime show.
Well, he's getting a lot of flack.
Why?
My home section was playing. All my friends were right behind
Timberlake. Oh, is that your people?
Yeah.
I don't know.
So
I didn't
awesome.
Even, I don't even know. I didn't even see a visual moves. Of it, so I don't even know what it looked like.
Oh, man, it was good. It was good. It wasn't the best Super Bowl halftime show I've ever seen. Prince, I think, is up there. How come Pearl Jam hasn't done a halftime show?
Because they're not sellouts?
Nah, they should do a halftime show.
They're not sellouts.
Maybe they won't do because they're not getting paid. You want to hear something crazy? The sound, I just read this article yesterday. The sound for the halftime show gets $10 million. Everything's paid by the NFL, $10 million. The performer gets paid zero. That doesn't make any sense.
No one should do it then. But
that's crazy. I know, but how could you say no to that? That's the problem.
Timberlake can say no to the halftime show.
He could.
Timberlake will be fine whether he does a halftime show or not.
Yeah. Yeah.
Timberlake could say no.
Well, the reason he's getting a lot of flack is...
In fact, everyone who's ever done the Super Bowl halftime show was okay enough to say no.
I agree.
It's not like they're giving someone their big break at the Super Bowl halftime show.
But I think it's kind of audacious just not to not pay them.
NFL doesn't even pay taxes.
Yeah, I know. So, I hate that, too. So. NFL's kind of shady about a lot of things.
Yeah.
But I love the sport so much that I just like look the other way as do.
We'll have the XFL soon, so we'll be able to watch that.
He's getting a lot of flack because, he was going to have a Prince hologram to pay tribute to Prince.
Uh-huh.
And scratch that at the last minute. And... A lot of people say, like, the Prince estate didn't want him to pay any tribute to him, but he was in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
He did this whole Prince thing in the middle of the halftime show. So he got a lot of flack for that. And they just thought the show fell flat. I didn't think the show fell flat. I've seen a lot of halftime shows, and that was definitely pretty fun.
Wow.
But he doesn't have the catalog, I would say, as some of the other acts that have come through there. I mean, Prince was ridiculous, you know?
Yeah.
But... yeah,
when did Prince do it? He did it a while ago. It rained. I remember.
Dude, you know what? The crazy thing is because all the soundboard gear, I mean, it's susceptible. It's like if any rain gets...
It's electronic. I know how rain electronics work.
Right.
You know?
So, and you know what the crazy thing is? They're not allowed to build anything overhead because of the cameras.
Yeah.
So they did a makeshift for Prince's show. They did a makeshift little kind of box. And they called Prince right before. They're like, hey, we just want to let you know that it's raining. And, you know, just to be, you know, really careful. And you know what Prince said? Make it rain harder. And he hangs up. I mean, it was just, he's a badass. And, like, his stage, there's a whole behind-the-scenes video I'll have to send to you. His stage was, like, super slippery. So, like, all those factors. And then he made it, like, an element as part of the show.
Well, yeah. You sing Purple Rain.
I know.
It's actually raining.
But that's what's so crazy. It hasn't rained during a Super Bowl halftime show in 40 years. So, it was just awesome.
Well, usually they're in nice weather areas where there isn't
or you would think,
weather.
Well, I would think that Miami would have a closed stadium, but they didn't. So, but yeah, anyways. Did you like any of the ads? Any Super Bowl ads?
The Han Solo trailer and the Infinity War trailer.
My favorite commercial that I saw was actually the Eli Manning, the touchdown dance one.
I don't care.
You didn't see that one?
I
thought that was hilarious.
Like
was
my wife keeps going, like, oh, watch this. I'm like, I don't care.
See, the Super Bowl for me, when I watch the Super Bowl, I watch everything.
I don't care. I just care about the game, and I hate watching Super Bowl because there's so much crap around it. It takes away from the game.
That's crazy.
Like there's like 25 minutes of stuff before, and
yes,
then there's like commercials that last forever, and there's like a 45 minute halftime. I just want to watch a football game.
Right. Right.
And my wife's like, "You're such a hater." I'm like, "I don't hate it. I just don't care about any of this. Like, I don't have an opinion. I don't care about it. I just don't care about it."
That's crazy because you're like,
I don't have
hardcore
hate.
Football fan.
I don't have for the game.
Right.
But not for all the pomp and circumstance
but that's like
that surrounds
the big,
it.
That's the big championship game for your
for the game. Sport. But I don't care about the bells and whistles. I just like the game of football.
I don't watch any.
And that was not a great game of football.
It wasn't the best, but it was.
It was
fun.
An exciting, was fun exciting. Game, but it wasn't a good game
it
of
was,
football.
Yeah, I agree because there was no strategy, no defense.
It was a Tecmo Bowl game.
Yeah, it was. It was. That was a great analogy.
It was duck back
hey,
and chuck
hey,
it.
Hey, you like Tecmo Bowl 1 or 2?
On the
last
Nintendo?
Question before I guess.
Super Tecmo Bowl, you mean?
Yeah.
I like the Super Tecmo Bowl.
I love the second one. But the second one.
Second one's better because you had shifts and motion.
Totally. The second one was awesome.
And Okoye would just truck everybody.
That's right. Looks like our special guest has arrived. Mr. Brian Irwin, say hello.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hello.
Brian.
Curtsy.
Brian.
Curtsy. Thank you for having me back.
How are you, man?
I'm doing great, thank you.
You've been up to a bunch of mischief.
Well, I mean, yeah, I've been solving crimes and being the PTA president and making films.
He's a PTA
and,
president.
Complaining to Eddie every other
Clean
day.
Up cat
You're
poo.
A PTA president?
I am.
Do you make everybody in the PTA address you as Mr. President?
No, I should. You know, I think, you know, I don't take it far enough.
Are you going to have a military parade?
Oh, my God, I just saw that. Is that real?
Yeah, we live in a dictatorship now.
I do have the kids parade in front of me every single
you
day.
Should have
salute
them line
me.
Up and salute.
You should wear a cape.
Is that wrong?
No. You should totally wear a cape.
Oh, my God. You know, can I tell you a quick story about capes? I've got this fascination with capes. I'm a huge superhero fan growing up, and I know that when I was growing up, and I'm probably all you guys are close to my age or younger, but old enough to know that, like, remember the curse of the cape? Like, guys didn't want to play superheroes because they thought that was the beginning, the end of your acting career, right? As an example, one of my favorite shows growing up was, when I was a little kid, was Greatest American Hero.
Best show.
And William Catt used to talk about the fact that he just, it bothered him that he played this. And granted, it was a comedy slash whatever superhero, but he always felt, because he was such a serious actor, he felt that that was a curse on him. I think those days are long over.
But probably was a curse.
I find it pretty funny that if that was the case, like, let's just take it on face value. What is a matter with society where, like, I'm sorry, man, you're only a superhero. I saw you in a cape, and I just cannot get over it.
I can't see you in a cape anymore.
Dude, what about the Bruce Wayne? I watched a documentary on Bruce Wayne, and it was crazy, the fact that he was, like, doing...
Adam West?
Yeah, I mean, sorry, Adam West. He was doing, like, car shows dressed up as Batman. Yeah.
Brian's a huge Batman 66 fan.
Yeah, I'm a huge Adam West fan. I remember when I first saw him, I was a little bit shocked when he started doing Emmanuel movies. And I'm sorry, I just dated myself.
Young
I
know Emmanuel.
Like, you know, yeah.
Well, I have a lot of respect for Seth MacFarlane because he gave Adam West's work. Like, he was like, man, I love you so much. I want you a part of this cartoon, and he just gave him so much work.
He was doing, softcore porn. Not doing it, but he was in softcore porn.
He was in
porn.
It, yeah. He was, you know, he was just collecting a paycheck, man, because he wasn't, you know, well, again, he was getting shot out of cannons. He was just trying to find a new way to, you know.
Curse of the Cape.
Curse of the Cape. But yeah, no, I was fortunate enough. Thank God he walked up to me one time after we saw him.
It's at Lovitz, wasn't it?
He was at the Lovitz.
He did a show at Lovitz.
The Lovitz, a lot of rest in pieces here. The Lovitz Comedy Club and Universal City Walk, rest in peace. But
if ever a comedy club had
closed?
A cape.
It is closed.
Oh my God,
if ever
that.
A comedy club had a cape.
Yeah. Frank Kelly, who ran it, he was so kind to let me and my wife sit in the... He gave me reserved seats in the front row for Ralph Garman to interview Adam West. And I was just that enough... I was already in heaven, but he came off the stage and walked right up to me, and he shook my hand and said thank you. And I have no idea why he did that. I was just like, and he didn't do that to anybody else. And I don't know if Frank, I never clarified if Frank told him to do that or whatever, but like, I had my moments, and it crushed me when he died. I mean, granted, he was getting older and all that stuff, but like, that's
he
one of my
best.
Few.
He was the best.
I don't have a lot of, like, I've been fortunate in the career that I've had working as a stage manager. I've been around a lot of famous people, but the ones, I mean, everything from Tom Cruise to Arnold Schwarzenegger, but the ones that matter the most to me were Adam West and William Catt. I know that sounds crazy, but like, that was my thing. That
was them on the same level, because to me it's like Adam West, William Catt.
Right. You know? I mean, they matter to me because that was my childhood. That was my identity. That's what I saw. But the whole point of the cape thing, and that's not even the story I wanted to tell you, is that when I first moved out here, I was performing at the Comedy Store down in La Jolla. I was working down there and living down there when I first moved out here. And there was a guy that would go on stage, and he wore a cape. And he would do his whole set, and he would never acknowledge the cape. And his comedy wasn't about the cape, like nothing. The cape was just on. And I never understood it. And I remember turning to the guy, the general manager at that club at the time, and I said, can I ask you a question? What's with dude with the cape? Like, why is he wearing the cape? And he goes, oh, yeah. Well, about 10 years ago, he came in, and he wasn't very funny. And the general manager back then said to him, he goes, you know, what would make your set funnier is if you wore a cape, sarcastically. And the guy's like, oh, okay. And so he just put on a cape. That's the only thing he changed. Not his act. He just wore a cape.
That is Eddie. I think you need to bring a cape to your act.
I can't hurt it.
But I'll forever tell that story and never forget the guy.
That's funny.
That's amazing. We love it.
Well, let's talk about why you're here.
Yeah, let's talk about why
you have
why
big
you're
news
here.
Coming up, right?
I have a big news story coming up.
Big news
I'm actually going to be the only thing that Trump's news cycle on Twitter. You think you believe me? Neither do I. No, I made a movie, and I think we actually... It's been a couple years since I've been on this show, and I think I may have just...
You either just finished shooting, or it was right around that time.
And it takes approximately about 2 years.
Well, you have so much CGI and special effects in
your movie. Yeah, that's what it was.
That's what it is. It's the post-production.
Yeah, it is the post-production. No, but it literally, in all honesty... I think it's the one thing that people get into Hollywood, why a lot of people try to get into TV, because it's more instant. I don't want to say instant, but like turnaround is a lot faster. You have to have a lot of patience when you make a film. Not only just to get it developed, that's a couple
editing,
years.
I feel like the editing is like the most arduous process.
Editing, distribution, and then literally from idea to getting something literally seen by the general public.
What was amazing about yours
is 3 to 4 years.
The idea, the script, and the shooting all took place within like 6 months.
Well, we had a plan.
Which was like ridiculously fast.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, we had a plan. I was contacted. Believe it or not, this whole thing stems from a Facebook message. Because I used to write about my kids all the time on Facebook, and there was a parent that I had met briefly through this place that has changed my life forever, which is Camelot Kids Preschool. The people that own it are some of our best friends and have been for years. And it all makes sense now, because everything that I've gotten has come through that preschool, which is really weird. Like, that's awesome. I didn't move on.
I wonder
if
I can put my third grader back in preschool.
Like, I mean, think about that. Like, that was not my game plan moving out. I was like, what I need to do is move to Hollywood, find a good preschool, and everything's going to change. But yeah, so... We had met there, and I was writing little stories about my kids, and I get this email from this guy that I kind of knew, and he's like, "Hey, I've been reading your stuff. It's really funny. Would you mind getting together for a coffee?" And I was like, "Sure, yeah, whatever." We get together, and he's like, "Look, I'm a director. Alonzo Mayo is his name. He's a director. He did admit a movie called The Story of Luke, and his investors wanted to make another movie, but initially he wanted to do a bunch of shorts, and he wanted to do shorts with kids." And I was like, "Yeah, absolutely not. I don't have the patience in my life right now. Have you not been reading what I've been writing? I cannot. I can't go down that path. It would be so frustrating." And I mean that in the nicest of ways. It is easier to write about the things you do with your kids and the funny things they say than to actually get kids to act out those funny things. I was just not in the right headspace. So I said, "How about I just got a vasectomy and I drive a minivan. That's the movie." And he looks at me, he's like, he's Peruvian, and he's like, "No, it's not. Why would you get a vasectomy? I would never do that." I go, "Exactly. You're already halfway there." And I said, "Okay, I know you don't understand this." I said, "But just do me a favor. You're married. You have kids. You're going to go to a party with a lot of other parents. Just go there. Just do me a favor. Go to the party and bring up vasectomy and just stand back and watch husbands and wives fight over it." And a couple weeks later, we got together. He's like, "Let's make the movie." And I was like, "What happened?" And he goes, "It is a hot topic, man. Vasectomy, you know, because women, if you think about it, and this is what I've learned growing up, with around a family now, is that women really bear the brunt of everything, right? We have the sex, and then we just go back to doing whatever we're doing. They bear the children, their bodies are destroyed, everything about, like, the whole process is very violent towards women. And then we have the nerve to be like, "Take a pill."
Right.
"Oh, go get, just cut your belly open and get your tubes tied." Like, it's a very intrusive surgery, right? For us, you go in, a guy's like, "Cough, you're good. Let me just sizzle those balls off for a sec there and sew it back up. You're good to go. Nothing's changing your life." And we're like, "No way, man. Don't you touch my balls," right? Like, that's how
it's
freaked
reversible,
out.
Right? Isn't it reversible?
Possibly.
You can't go in. Therein lies the other problem. That's all the urologists right now so upset with you for asking such a ridiculous question. But yeah, no, that's the one question they hate. They will kick you out of the room if you ask that. They don't want to deal with it. They're like, "No," because, like, for them, that's their malpractice, right? You'd be like, "Hey."
They're like, I actually went in a year ago when I had my yearly physical. I brought up vasectomy to the doctor, and he was like, he wouldn't even refer me to a urologist to get it done until I thought about it for 6 months and then contacted him again. And then he would give me a urologist recommendation.
Yeah, which is very funny, because ultimately
you need to think about this.
Yeah. I'm like, but what I learned is culturally...
Well, he's probably wanted you to hold on to your balls.
Yeah.
You don't lose your balls. You're not getting castrated.
But I'm saying these are the conversations that happen in a man's world. It's like, well, no. That's what we call it fixed, because that's the mentality of men. It's like, "Oh, I'm literally going to be a fat dog that doesn't have his balls anymore." Like, that's the fear. It's like, no. Nothing, in which is so funny after having gone through the process before making the movie, nothing changes. And that's why I think it's so funny that husbands and wives will come to blows and almost get divorced over a simple simple procedure.
Meaning, like the wife wants her, him to get it? And he,
yeah, because again, look at it from a female point of view.
Right.
They are destroying their bodies for our pleasure.
Right.
Destroying them, right? Like, I had to kind of come to that, but that's just a part of the movie. The reality of it is that I was at the preschool one day, and I was standing there, and I had my two little booger drippers running around the lot. And
Eddie and one of your kids.
I brought Eddie to see. I was training him. I was training to be a parent. And I had that Alfred Hitchcock moment. I don't know if Alfred Hitchcock was huge in this special effect that he would do to create anxiety. He would dolly in on a shot and simultaneously zoom out, and it creates a flattening effect. Have you ever seen that? You'll know.
It looks like the background drops away from
you. The background, literally.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
That, I had that moment. And that was my moment that basically turned into the concept of a movie, which was like all of a sudden I was like the talking heads. I was like, this is not my life. What happened? I didn't move here for the. Why? I drove a minivan here. I got a vasectomy, and there's. What? This.
I
this
came
is
here
not my identity. Like,
be famous.
I panicked. I lost my mind, and so that's really what this movie's about. It's about a guy that has an early midlife crisis. This is like, well, you want me to get a vasectomy? You want me to get a minivan? Are you asking me just to not be a man anymore? Like, give up?
I've already
on my
given
life?
Up so much.
Right. It's just all of it, by the way. And this is his hero's journey. Is ridiculous.
Right.
It's like you just have to kind of come to terms with like what your life is. And it's a comedy. He's, you know, we do what we all do, right? When we get upset, let's go get some good advice from our buddies. Because, you know, dudes always have good advice for other dudes. Which I've never gotten good advice from my friends. I look back at my life on all my breakups I've ever had. I'm like, dude, so-and-so broke up with me. And what's a classic dude's answer? If you were to call your buddy like when you were younger, like so-and-so broke up, what was the advice for you?
Dude, you should have done it. It'd be something stupid. Or I told you so.
Or yeah. Or screw her, man. Yeah. Let's go get drunk and laid with somebody else. Yes. That's it? That's your solution to every problem?
Yes.
Just mask it.
Screw it up, you know. So a lot of other things happen in this movie because of that poor advice. And what I really the best part about this movie that I was really proud of is that I learned one valuable thing from my wife, because I do have a really good wife, is that women are very rational. They're very intelligent. They're very well thought out. And instinctually, they've been doing this whole family kid business thing a lot longer,
yes.
Good, better at it than us. It is. Right. And so they are truly the voice of reason in any relationship. So if you actually take the time as a man to pay attention and listen to them, you will find out that they've got it dialed in, and you might learn a few things. So we really empower the females in this movie to kind of like be that counterbalance to guys who just like are just so immature and are just so worried about their testicles.
Apes. We really are like
apes. We are. We are. And the best thing about it is we also have the ability to laugh at ourselves.
Right.
Like, unequivocally. Like, we get it. Like, we will never, ever get all millennial and upset at ourselves. Right? Like, and just be like, I'm offended. No, we're not. We're never offended. No. We can make fun of ourselves until we're going to be the last men standing. No, no pun intended, right? Like, we can just make fun of ourselves. So anyway, sorry to be so worried, but that's about the idea behind
Fixed. So
start
to finish, from the time you started writing to the time you started shooting, was 6 months?
Well, okay. So he was on a timeline. So when he contacted me, he said, I want to do something. And he said, but here's what I've learned about the creative process. If you don't give yourself a timeline, us creative types have a tendency to drag stuff out. We will continue to edit and over-edit and overthink. He's like, so let's hammer out the idea. Let's say we want to be, and I think we met in February, and he said, let's guarantee ourselves that we are filming by July, and that puts us on the clock. And it was great because it really focused us as writers, and it really got us to just, I mean, we took basically a germ of an idea and turned it into a story. Mm. And which wasn't too hard because we were both dads. We both had opposite points of view about vasectomies and minivans and life and marriage. So we were able to counter those against each other and write the script. But I was amazed. Like, it was so great to work with somebody like that. And Alonzo, he had won an Academy Award as a student at AFI. So this dude was dialed in. Like, dude, he already knew what was up.
What was the movie he worked on?
I don't even know. It was a student. It's not the ones that you get. I mean, but it was like, right. I was still like, oh, I see it. I'm like, crazy. Dude. And it's so funny, you know, them, they're like, yeah, but it's a student one. I'm like, I don't care what it is.
It says
Academy Award on that, dude.
Yeah.
He's a very, very talented guy. I mean, I was very fortunate to get hooked up with he and his wife, who's a producer. And they kept me in check, man. And we I think the script was locked by May, and then the rest of it became production, casting.
Including rewrites and everything?
Everything. We you know, because that was it. It was like, figure it out, right? Crazy. And be able to have
how many
his,
pages?
I think it ended up being about 93 pages. You know, comedy, you want to, it's minutes. Give or take, depending on the pace of it, but you want it to be an hour and a half or less. And I think the movie came out to 87, 88 minutes or something like that, which is about right for a comedy. And yeah, we were in. Casting was a little bit difficult. Man, oh man, that was a little bit hard.
What was the biggest obstacle with that?
Honestly, and I mean no disrespect to Hollywood, but we wanted a diverse cast. And initially, when you put out the casting calls, that's not what you get.
You get a lot of white kids.
You got a lot of white people.
And he's like, but, yeah. But.
And I don't, but again, I don't, it's just, this movie was based in Los Angeles, and we wanted it to feel like what it's like in Los Angeles.
Right.
Los Angeles is a melting pot, and the people that everybody hangs out with, we're all different, we all look different, we're different colors, different races, whatever, and we wanted it to have that feeling to it, but initially, it was really hard to get over that hump, so it took time, and then past that, we were working on a smaller budget, so you're going to lose out to a lot of people who just, if they don't buy into the project, they're out. And that's okay, because ultimately we ended up getting a great cast. And I believe the success of both television and film really doesn't come in the lead as to one star. It typically is driven by a really good chemistry of
a cast,
a group of people usually make the product better. I truly believe that. And you know, we were able to have really good.
All no names at the time.
I agree. You know? American Pie. Yep. Did you know any of those people when you saw that movie? No, you heard about a movie where
Hangover. Hangover was the same. Yeah. One of the most successful comedies of all time.
Yeah. I think an ensemble cast makes a huge difference, and we were very fortunate, you know, to have the ensemble cast. And I was fortunate enough for all the years that I've been out here to have some good, talented friends that I was able to call on that were some names that were willing to come in and do some day playing. And, man, I'll tell you, what a great experience it was. And I'm really proud of the movie. It's been very well received. Parents get it. And it's I'm looking forward to coming out, you know.
You started shooting in July, and when did you wrap?
We shot...
You only did like 16 days or something like that, wasn't it? It was 12 days.
It was.
It was a short time.
It was 15 days. It was 3 5-day weeks. But we again to if I
planning can, that's going on in my head. I'm getting anxiety just thinking about planning.
No, but that's the thing of working with Alonzo and Nina was that they had a plan in place. I learned a lot. I mean, I had worked in a lot of production. I worked on hundreds of productions. So I didn't go in like an idiot. Right. I knew what I was doing, and I was on board with them. But their attitude going in, which I agreed with, was it's 12-hour days no matter what. We are not – most indie films, and I've worked on a lot of independent films, they burn you to the ground. They shoot 6 days a week. By the end of the week, you're shooting 18, 19 hours to finish the day. It's all wrong. Wow. Everyone's grumpy. No one's into it. You end up getting a bad product. We just realized, we just basically created a movie and an environment and a group of people that understood that we were all in this together, and we were gonna do it the right way, and we weren't going to grind anybody. And that really, it pays off. It pays off when you look at the film. I know it. You wouldn't know it because you weren't there, but I know it.
Have scheduling conflicts just because the time that you're shooting is less per day, but you're doing it for a longer duration, right?
Yeah. I mean, you typically have there was our three main leads, which were the three men, Andy Como, Nelson Franklin, and Leonard Roberts. They were shared the lion's share of most of the days. And, you know, we got lucky that most of that block of that 18 days, I don't think there was really that. I mean, maybe an hour or two here or there if somebody had something they needed to do, but no. I mean, some of the cameos, you have to work around those availabilities. But those are all the things that make you sweat early on, right? Like that's a lot of filmmaking is making these things work, is finding the locations, getting all the gear, getting a really talented people to shoot it. Tommy Maddox, who was the DP, between he and
former
Alonzo.
NFL player,
huh?
Former NFL quarterback.
No, he would play NFL.
UCLA.
No, he played. I was at Boston College. He was a quarterback. I can't remember.
No,
where
UCLA?
He
played, Tommy Maddox.
No, different Tommy Maddox. Okay. He's an East Coaster, but he was a quarterback in one of the Eastern. Seaboard, whatever you call it over there. One of those. Like
Tommy Maddox played for the Steelers, right?
Yeah, different guy.
I know.
But anyway, it was all of that. You know, it's funny. You know, It's all the stuff you don't think about that actually comes into it's. Yeah, you can have a great script. Yes, you can have great actors. Yes, you can have a great director. But if people are not on a day-to-day basis making a movie, if they're not into it, that could totally bone you.
Well, the way I've learned it with just being in a band, you're only as strong as your weakest link. So it's like if the person that is the most unhappiest with the filmmaking process is just at a level where it's like you don't think it's going to move or it's going to be something that you're engaging or it's captivating, that's your landmark. That's like where your barometer is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So what was the total number of cast, shooting, actors, crew, etc.? What was the total number?
Crew-wise, I think we rolled it around 25. It was not a big crew, but you kind of, you know, if you have a minimalist approach to it. But the movie, by the way, when we made it with budget in mind. And our first thing was both creatively and functionally. We wanted the movie to be grounded in reality. So all the comedy, this is not slapstick. This is like, there's no big, you know, 800-pound gorilla scenes where it's going to cost you an arm and a leg. There's no cars flipping over. You know what I mean? There's no crazy special effects. It's reality that makes you laugh. It's grounded in reality that makes you laugh. Like that's kind of the approach that we took. So once you start there, you really kind of zone in on that, and you don't necessarily need to be moving with this big, massive crew of people. And quite frankly, we didn't have a huge cast because a lot of it did focus around these three main characters, two of which were supporting our main character. You know, so the kids and the family life and everybody else kind of comes in and out, but there was never these big, big moments. We had a couple birthday party scenes, and there's a really interesting scene that has to do with a video that comes up.
That's one of the big laugh out loud moments of the movie.
Which my kids are in that. I gave my kids a cameo.
It's pretty
hilarious.
My
kids to be in the movie. I chose to not be in the movie because I didn't want to wreck it. So I let my, but I gave my kids a
Me
cameo.
Me too. I chose not to be in the movie as well.
Okay.
And he's one of the white guys.
You know what? I'm having a flashback right now.
Had I been offered a part, I would have turned it
I'm
down.
I'm having a flashback to the last time I was here. He said the same damn thing about this movie.
Had I been offered the part, I would have declined.
You hit the same whiny moment last time I was here about how you and John Huck are so upset that I didn't cast you guys as a lead in the film, not understanding how complex this business is, Ed.
I would not. I would have turned it down had I been asked.
Hey, it's not show friends. It's show business.
Had I been asked, I would have turned it down.
It was cool. I will say that there is also a little bit of me in the movie. I know my friends have watched it, and they're like, oh, really, a little bit of you? I mean, it's obviously an exaggerated.
Right.
It's not a documentary. It's right. Just an exaggerated idea. But there is an actually relatively serious moment in the movie that was very close to me because I did pull a lot of it. It was funny when I watched it with my wife. I was kind of looking over at her to see if she was going to be like, "Yeah, buddy, let's go ahead and chill out with the amount of information, you know." We're taking in
everything
using
up
to.
There.
I mean, it's not dead on.
Is she a good sport about it?
Absolutely. My wife, you have to understand. So my wife met me when I was doing stand-up, and I'll never forget the first time she saw me. I was doing the belly room at the Comedy Store. She's sitting in the back, and I go up, and I start talking. And I'm talking about her. And I get off stage. She's like, "You can't talk about me." And I'm like, "Okay, we need to go talk in the hallway real quick. If you want to have a relationship with me, you need to understand right now that I do have a limit as to how personal I will get."
Right.
But you can never tell a comic what they can and cannot talk about.
Yeah, right.
I'm not going to demean you. I truly believe I would never do that. But right away she's like, "Ooh, wow." And it got weird for a sec, and then all of a sudden she's like, "I get it. I totally understand. I trust you. I know you're not going to slander me."
Right.
And so we had, like, from that, that's why we're still together. My wife gets me. She knows where I
And she knows
how
about slander. She's
go.
A lawyer.
Yeah.
She knows about all that stuff.
But I would never humiliate her.
Well, let me ask you that. You touched on an interesting topic because do you think because you don't want to, A, hurt her feelings, slander her, do you think that you use that as a filter for your comedy? Like, do you censor stuff that you could, like, would you censor a joke that would be a riot if it did slander her? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that's an easy answer, and it's no, and I'll tell you why. Because for me, my comedy is very much about me, my life, and my family, and my kids.
Yeah, you're the foil in most of your.
I was gonna say, so yeah, Eddie knows. So really, everything starts in the fact that I just can't get my life together. Mm. So it's really. you know, you have to be very, you have to make a conscious choice, I believe, as a comedian. You either are attacking others and basically seeing what you believe is the stupidity in them and the wrongness in them, or you bring a lot of it, like Eddie's kind of very similar to me in the fact that we bring a lot of it on ourselves.
Right.
And like, we just can't get our act together. And so for me, it doesn't really ever come up that I feel the need to go down that path, because it wouldn't work. It wouldn't make sense. And quite frankly, my wife's got her act together. She doesn't give me much.
I can't say much.
She doesn't give me much.
She's a lawyer.
No, she's too good at what she does. She doesn't give me any material anymore. No, like, she doesn't fail enough to give me material.
It's like with music for me, it's you chase down anything for a great song. No matter what it is, it's all about being vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, in that situation, if I was a comic, I would probably make the choice, I don't want to make a choice that's going to hurt somebody's feelings that's close to me, if it, you know, puts them in a situation that they do feel offended. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
Would you sacrifice that? I guess what I'm asking is, you have to choose to sacrifice the joke versus, you know,
I think you can do it as long as you do it in a way where you're also implicating yourself more. Like, there's things when I'll take a couple jabs at my wife, but I make sure when I punch back at myself, it's much harder.
Right.
You know?
But then it's funny. But I'm saying, like, is there a moment where it's like the joke is so good and it only involves her? Would you choose the joke, or would you choose... Obviously, I think you would choose the relationship to save her.
Well,
save that.
Okay, right? I will share. So, a great advice I got. Louis Anderson's a dear friend, but he's also my mentor. And he, years and years and years ago, we were doing comedy together, and he was watching, you know, my set. And afterwards, I got off stage. He said, I want to share something with you. And he said, your life stories are really funny. And he said, but the problem is you're hanging on the truth too much. He said, comedy is tell the truth and then lie. Because that's how you get to the comedy. You can't, like, if you think about it at a dinner party, you're either a great storyteller or you're telling the story exactly how it went down and no one cares. Like, everybody, when they want to be captivated by a story, you better finish big.
Yeah,
because otherwise, I mean, we've all been at a dinner party where we've been there when it doesn't work. And it's such a weird moment when somebody's really telling you a story and you're like, and they're like, and what? You're like, okay, you should stop telling stories because you haven't quite figured it out. Because here's the thing. No one's fact-checking your stories. No one's Googling your story afterwards. They want to be entertained. So it's like, tell them the truth and then lie. And when I was going back to the movie thing, you know, with my wife, and the reason why she didn't get mad is because I took an idea. I took a moment in our life. And I massaged it, and I changed it into something else. But the reality of two people coming together, and in the movie, it's a little bit more of a serious moment. And so there is, I took the vulnerability of something that happened in my life and used it in the film.
Parallel.
I did, yeah, but it wasn't the exact same conversation. But I remember that moment, and I remember the vulnerability of someone saying, "Look, man, you're not who you think you are," kind of moment, and that's the part that I took. The rest of it, those are just words.
But that's smart, because then the two of you can relate to that moment when you're watching that movie.
But I was still worried that she's mad at me for even biting a little bit of that, like even dipping, right?
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. So the movie, when's the release, or has it been released?
Well, it's available for pre-order on iTunes. It comes out on the 13th, but I'll make it even easier for everybody. We're calling it a Valentine's Day movie, February 14th, because I mean, what I've been saying to everybody is, let's be honest: if you're married and you have kids, you're not going out on Valentine's Day anyway. And this is a perfect this is a perfect movie for you to rent or buy, whatever you want to do, on Amazon or iTunes.
It. Everyone buy it.
Just VOD. Buy it. Well, I mean, but the point is, it's available. It's available on everything but Netflix. Netflix is not until the end now. It's kind of like Netflix has become what Blockbuster, the guys they got rid of. Netflix has become the last place it lands, but it's available on all digital platforms, and which it's a perfect place for married people with kids who can sit in on a couch or, quite frankly, in your room on a bed and watch a movie and relate to a lot of it and laugh about it. I mean, it really is a very relatable comedy, because people that are in that situation, everybody is going to pick a moment in there. They're going to go, yes, I've had that moment. And quite frankly, I'm not saying that if you're not married and you don't have kids, that you shouldn't watch this movie, because also it is a great warning to every single person that's eventually going to have their kids on accident. And I bring that up because over 80% of all human beings Because a lot of people are in denial. Over 80% of all human beings will eventually have children, whether they want to or not. Thank you. Thank you.
Dropping bombs over here.
Well, listen. I have very little knowledge, but I know that much.
How many kids do you have?
I have two boys.
Two boys, and how old were they when they started shooting versus... I mean, the whole movie took, what, 6 months?
No. Oh, wait, what?
From shooting. July. You said July to...
No. We only shot for 3 weeks.
But editing, too?
Oh, yeah. So, again, from the time it was done, I think it's been about 2 years.
Wow.
So the boys were, they're 12 and 9 now, so they would have been 10 and 7 back then.
That's got to be exciting for them, their first movie.
Oh, yeah. The problem is they can't watch the whole scene.
Ah,
yeah.
That sucks.
Well, so for those of you who are going to see the movie, we had to shoot around what the kids could see in that thing. That, to me, that's the beauty of like filmmaking is like trying to find a way to make certain things fun. Work.
What'd you tell them they were watching in that scene to make them react that way?
I can't remember what Alonzo told me. He said something. Basically, it's like with like anything with kids, you're like, you're looking at something on a TV that you're not allowed to see. That's more than enough for kids. Yeah. And they get really excited, right? Because they think it's just naughty, straight up naughtiness, right?
And why didn't you want to put yourself in the movie?
Well, first off, I didn't really feel like there was anything that fit me or that I could add to it. And there was so much talent already available. And I'm a stand-up comedian by trade, not an actor by trade. So why? I'm a firm believer, and I was telling Eddie this off air. I learned this from a really good friend of mine who's been in this business a long time. He's like, don't ever get in the way of your own stuff. If you really want to succeed, your opportunities will come, but whatever you do, please don't stand in the way of something if you know that there's something better that can get you there. And so I took that approach. I really understood that I was being given a great opportunity here to share my voice, something that I went to film school for and got kicked out, which is funny because I actually have a letter from my school that said that I should find another business to get
really?
Into. Don't make movies. Yeah, I have a letter that I've kept to this day that said don't make movies.
Well, Dolly was told the same thing. Yeah. So.
Well, I think we've all had that moment. And again, I mean no ill will towards those people. They just didn't, you know, it's just not their place to tell you how to live your life. That's what I've after all these years. But no, I mean, I knew that I had a moment, and I was stoked about it. This is what I came out here for. And so when you see that opportunity is being offered to you, you just kind of go, all right, what are my real strengths here? Where should I be putting my best energy to get the best out of it? You know? And so I did. I know how to write, and I know how to produce. So I did those things instead, and I'm totally satisfied with that.
Do we have a trailer? I want to play a trailer. Do we have any kind of sneak peek?
I don't think we have a trailer.
You have it.
I have it.
We can go to Facebook. If it's on,
yeah, like, play it on Facebook. Eddie.
Yeah, you can make the sounds.
Well, you'll just hear sounds. It's not going to really.
Well, that's still selling some.
It's all dialogue. There's no explosions. Yeah. I mean, if you want, we can add explosions. There's our special effects for the movie.
I can make a little some sound effects.
I'm going to have to sign into Facebook.
Here we go.
So you got to be more prepared. Man.
I wasn't expecting to play a trailer on radio.
Why not? It's so good. We've done it before.
By the way, I thank you for letting me come
Ryan,
in and talk
you
about this.
You want
this
to log in on your
it's very selfish. You can't do it?
Well, if I log in on Facebook.
Log into your email, and I'll email you the links, for God's sakes, Eddie. It shouldn't be this difficult.
Wait a second. I have it on here. I'll play it through the microphone.
There you go. See,
there you go. Let's hear it.
Everyone's settled.
I'm fine.
You
got yeah.
I should have told you to do that. I'm sorry.
I mean, since we're kind of stalling time for Eddie, you know, a couple other people that I think it's important to, thank for Aaron Hayes, who was on Children's Hospital, really, really talented comedic actress. She was on the film. Another dear friend, Mindy Sterling, who is from all the Austin Powers movies for Oliver Bissena. She came in and day played for us on the film. Jamie Kaler, longtime friend Jamie Kaler, great actor. He's in it. He's got some really funny scenes. So we had a lot of really great friends that were willing to step up and help out wherever they could.
That's
too.
Fantastic.
So
are you submitting it to film festivals?
We already did all that stuff. Okay. It's done. And once you get distribution, because film festivals really are all about showcasing and trying to get distribution. We got Gravitas is doing the distribution, which was great. And that just guarantees we're going to get out all over the place.
That's
look, you know, a little insight to the film business, you got a week or two to be relevant. And that's no different. It's something that we all see. We just don't think about it.
Right.
That goes for any movie of any size, right? If you think about it, it comes out in the theaters, or it comes out on iTunes or whatever. You got about a week to capture eyes and hearts and minds. And if people are invested, it stays. If people don't invest or they didn't see it, it gets big. Look, I mean, you know how many things come out on a daily basis?
I know. It's crazy. Especially with TV shows, music, film.
YouTube.
Films, YouTube. Here we commercials, go. I got whatever it is.
You guys ready?
Sure. Let's see what you can do. It's already gotten awkward.
Remember that woman who you thought got you, who you desired, who did all that wonderful shit that made you squeal in bed? Remember her? That woman vanished.
Can you sing me a lullaby?
No, I'll be fine, as long as she doesn't mention the minivan again.
You should get a minivan. Jason loves ours, don't you, Jason?
Can we just talk about sports again?
I guess it could be worse. It's not like she's asking for a vasectomy, right?
You know how much this means to me, right?
There they are. Two of them. Good to know. Smooth. Smallish.
You would do it for Daisy, right, if she asked?
Hell no!
Oh, come on. Wow.
That's cutting me down, and not in a million years.
After all I went through for you, really?
Your family doctor sent over your blood tests, and they are normal for a man your age who doesn't exercise. Congratulations, you are a completely average candidate for a vasectomy. Aww.
Tell me, and do not spare my feelings, what did I do to deserve this?
She's attacking you on three fronts. Minivan, vasectomy, and sex. She's smart, man. She's very smart.
I would love to see one of you bleed out of your dicks for a week, a month. And you know, we haven't even mentioned childbirth.
Okay, Phil, just take it back right now.
Hey, we found your boss.
What you have to do is either work through your fears and accept your boring, sad, middle-aged married life, or not. I'm going to schedule your appointment for Monday.
Monday? Yeah.
Get the wife off your back. You have a week to decide.
Get
by! Either way, stock up the fridge with frozen peas. Great for the swelling.
Okay. Maybe we'll just postpone the vasectomy. Maybe everything can get back to normal around here.
I don't think anything will be going back to normal.
Kids, please go to your room.
Daddy's gonna get it.
Alan Ruck, by the way, from Paris. Thank you.
He's the doctor.
He's the doctor in this, awesome. And he does an amazing job.
Cameron,
too.
Yeah, Cameron.
I know Cameron.
Yeah. Spin City, for those of you who would take it back at least up to the 90s, right? Is it the 90s, Spin City? Yeah. Anyway,
Michael J. Fox and Charlie Sheen did it for like a season or two. Didn't they hand it off to him for a season or two before Two and a Half
Alan
Men?
Alan Ruck was there for a while. Yeah. Was holding it down.
It's funny. He one of the reasons why he did the movie, he had just literally 2 weeks prior to the movie or getting the scripts, and it just had a vasectomy.
Really?
And he was like, he laughed and he's like, serendipity. I'm doing this movie.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was great.
He probably was like, no Ferris jokes. No questions.
I don't know if anybody, it's always the thing you wonder, like, with some of the crew, is like, is somebody going to walk up to him and, like, bring it up? And they don't, honestly, in all the years, and I genuinely have been fortunate to work with a lot of people on a lot of productions, no one really ever does that. I wonder about that, how much of that is, though, don't look them in the eyes, don't ask them about this stuff. Is it them, or is it their handlers, or is it just these myths that float around out there? Because I've been around a lot of people, and I've nothing. Like, it's literally, none of that's happening.
I've definitely been around the ridiculous.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I guess maybe I've just been fortunate, that I haven't seen it. You mean ridiculous, like that kind of stuff? Like don't talk
around to musicians and people, like friends, and they're like, hey, by the way, just don't tell him you're a musician. He hates that. It's like, what? And then that person would be like, oh, you're a musician. I can tell. And I'm like, and I look over to the front, like, what do I say?
See,
like, go ahead and tell him. It's like, what?
Well, somebody said that that's a setup.
I don't know.
I don't know. No, meaning
some
that
are just weird. They're just weird.
But that person
are
does
socially awkward.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like,
oh my god.
They do some great piece of work. Like, there's a rumor that Matthew Broderick refuses to have anybody ask him questions about Ferris Bueller. That's like a thing, and he has not made a movie that's that iconic as Ferris Bueller. So it's like, you make this fantastic
Godzilla
movie.
Come on. What's more didn't iconic he just do than Godzilla?
Election, no.
Didn't just last Super Bowl, didn't he make a Ferris Bueller commercial?
He did.
But he's working. He's getting paid to do
it.
It
just goes to show you. I don't know. I used to manage bands back in the day, and we used to have this conversation all the time. Two of them were on record labels. One had a top 40 hit. The other one didn't. And the band that didn't have the top 40 hit, we used to talk all the time. It's like, what... What do you want out of this? Do you want to be an artist?
Yeah, but,
or would you be satisfied with one hit? Like,
it goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning, like Adam West. It's like, do you, like, I'm sure at one point he did not want to be talked about as Batman. And then
I,
when he then,
that.
He aged into it, he's like, you know what? That was a great thing in my life. I need to appreciate that.
Well, that's perspective. I think
that's perspective.
But does everybody get perspective? You know, I mean, that's a thing. And maybe some artists just never get.
Well, because Adam West probably went through the, you know, being shot out of a cannon, doing softcore, being himself. Yeah. And Matthew Broderick's been constantly working his whole life, so maybe he doesn't have that perspective. He doesn't have the appreciation for, like, oh my god, I was actually in a film like that. Whereas, like, Adam West was like, you know what? I'm part of pop culture for eternity,
forever.
I just feel like if you make something great, and you get that lucky. And it really is, a lot of it is luck.
Yeah, but when you keep working consistently after that, you think you're better than that project was.
That's bullshit. That's just ego.
But when you get labeled that, and then you have to go through all, and you go, then you hit bottom, and you have to come back up, and then you have the perspective, like, you know what, that was a great thing. What would my life been without that? I don't know. That's the perspective. I think you have to go down. I think people who stay up top like that don't have the perspective. Like Harrison Ford hates Han Solo.
Yeah.
Because he's had such an incredible career. Had that been the only thing he had, he might have better perspective on it.
So you mean like Mark Hamill?
Yeah, exactly, like Mark Hamill.
No, I mean, seriously, like, he's embraced
it. He was Luke Skywalker, and then he did The Joker, which is still amazing, but he did not have the Harrison Ford's movie career.
But I don't think Mark Hamill never not embraced.
No, that's...
Well, he was also a self-proclaimed nerd before he got Luke Skywalker. Like, he's always been a fanboy before he got Luke Skywalker. But
I remember what a big story that was back when he got in that van accident. Remember that whole thing about the
crushed
face?
His face.
And yeah, it's just... That was like a big deal back then.
That's
huge deal.
They had the right in the Wampa attack at the beginning of Empire Strikes Back just to explain why his face was all messed up.
Yeah. Little things in life. It hasn't really affected. That's the funny thing is, something like that, you would think it would affect them. It's like, how amazing is that? They're like, well, we're just going to have this. We're just going to create a character that's going to rip your face off, and you're still in this. You're still in this. Okay, thank you. Most people would be like, yeah, sorry, man. You're sorry, right. We're moving on.
We're getting a new Luke Skywalker.
Right.
Right.
We're going to soap opera you and just replace you with somebody else.
We're going to kill you from
the
monster.
And we're not even going to acknowledge it.
So let me ask you this. Are you going to do... is there going to be eventually like maybe a theatrical release for your friends and family or anything like that?
We did a screening at LA Center Studios, the former company that I worked for.
I was there.
Yeah. Look, I shouldn't say... Definitively, I have no answers on anything in the future for sure, but there would be no specific reason at this point once it gets to digital platforms. And look, there was a time, I think, that people had shame in their voice when they would talk about, like, it didn't get a theatrical release. We've moved past that in our culture.
Now. It's way different.
A lot of things. I mean, for God's sakes, Will Smith did a digital release. Yep. Like, it doesn't matter who you are anymore. Like, those days are over. Brad Pitt did a digital release. Like, that's the new norm, actually. So it's not really a thing. It's very expensive to go into theaters. A lot of people go into theaters solely to get reviews. Because it's hard to get reviews if you don't, but I think that's also going to change. I've always been pretty good about predicting, you know, what's coming next, and it's just, digital distribution is kind of a no-brainer. It's not just me. It's not like, oh, look at how amazing I am figuring that out. I think we can all now see the writing on the wall. It's headed that direction, and I look at my kids. I don't like what my kids watch right now. They don't even watch movies. They watch guys talk about video games, and I think I want to
YouTube.
I'm going to lose my mind.
Yeah, millennials.
It's a thing.
I don't get it.
It's a thing.
Don't
they could
get it.
But, you know, again, I also got to remember, I'm like, my dad's such a sweetheart. I remember trying to convince my dad to keep on the song White Lines on the radio as we were driving to school, trying to explain to him, you don't understand, Dad. This is a song about drug culture and cocaine, like trying to be like so profound with my father's like, oh, dear God, when is this going to end? I don't need to listen to White Lines.
But that's still a song. I mean, that's not just...
No, but it was I was trying to force my generation on a guy that was like, I'm done. I don't need this kid.
Right.
I'm good.
Right.
Thank you for your White Line speech, but I don't need it. I've got...
Yeah.
You know,
let me ask you this. When you saw the screening...
Yeah.
Like, you know, I find with music, if you play a song to somebody and there are other people in the room, all of a sudden you start to hear it the way other people hear it. So when you are watching this movie with an audience around, are you seeing things kind of objectively as the audience is seeing it?
Or okay, the screening, skewed? No, because the screening was primarily friends and family, so you figure they're going to give you a little extra, right? I got goosebumps, though, because, I mean, let's be honest. I made something, and it was on a big screen.
Right.
Right? So there That's was awesome. That moment that was really cool. It was great to share with friends that moment. And, you know, Eddie came down. A lot of my great friends came down and supported. So that mattered to me. That was, for me, that's like way up there in my life of things that mattered. Like, regardless of what had happened after that, that mattered, right? To be able to share that moment. But when we made film festivals, and I went to some of the film festivals, and you sit in the back in theaters filled with strangers, that is cool.
That's awesome.
Because then you think, because you're watching it thinking, well, I did that,
yeah.
or we did that to get this reaction.
And those people have no personal investment
no,
in
they,
what you're...
And they don't
they're
know.
Just there to see something.
Yeah. And so those moments, man, that was when everything you did to get a certain reaction works, that's goosebumps. That's a really good, special feeling. And yeah. you can always go and go, I did right. I did. You, know, yeah. you can feel yeah. good about yourself.
It's like, I know what I'm doing. I know what yeah. I'm doing. Yeah. It's like when you do, like, people like, don't you like perform with your friends and family stand up? Like, no. Not at all.
You want strangers.
You want a room full of strangers.
Yeah, well, that's our personal challenge, right? As same thing with musicians. It's like, you know, you want to be able to touch people instantly and uniquely because they're strangers. And that's really what we're, you know, that's the vein we're tapping, right? Yeah. Like, yeah. really, that's the beauty of it. That doesn't dismiss those that love us and want to support us. We get that part of it. It's just different.
What's the name of the movie one more time?
Fixed.
And we can find it on iTunes?
iTunes.
All digital
and
platforms?
Amazon. All digital platforms. Just not Netflix. It'll come on Netflix later. All VODs.
Can you
all
like
VODs.
Google Fixed Movie or Fixed
just,
Movie?
Yeah, if you, I would definitely put Fixed Movie. I don't necessarily know if you just Google Fixed. Right. You may be getting pictures of dogs going in for surgery. I cannot say for sure.
Fixed.
Well, you know, you have to be popular enough to beat out whatever was before you, right? That's just how the internet works. But yeah, Fixed.
Or just go to iTunes and search Fixed.
Yeah.
It'll pop up.
It'll definitely pop up.
Or Amazon.
Amazon, iTunes, whatever you want. Google it. IMDb it. What all the kids are doing. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. It's all there. There's plenty of trailers for you to watch. There's other little things that you can watch there, too. Fixed Valentine's Day. You know, treat yourselves. Again, like I said, let's be honest. You're not going out. This is the movie for you, okay?
Love it. Brian, you've been a fantastic guest.
You guys are wonderful people.
I hope you keep making movies.
I do, too.
I hope you keep writing
stories. Yeah, and
you
I will keep turning down those parts I am not offered.
Yeah, give me the parts.
You know how I keep making movies?
Yes.
When people buy and rent the films that you made.
We have like 5 TV shows we've never made that we have completely written.
Crazy. We Eddie and I have played with dolls
yeah.
together and iPhones.
We have so many undone projects that are not.
Well, maybe.
But buy this one and maybe we can make other ones.
This is the catalyst. Buy this movie. Fixed.
But until then, I'll just be a PTA president.
And it's released on the 13th, correct?
On the 13th, Valentine's Day, however you want to call it. Please buy it and rent it. That's my shameless plug. I appreciate it. Fixed. Guys, thank you so much for everything you've done for me.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Brian. We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.